was a planned assault on a lost generation that had no heroes. A larger-than-life fairy tale.
Kiss. Oh, Kiss.
You wanted the best and you got it.
Strange ways. Twisted ways.
All right, greetings from Jindel. This is the Strange Ways Kiss Podcast. I'm Jody Havnock.
I'm D-Rock.
Hi, this girl. Is Haywood, you blow me.
John Weezen, everybody knows me as Weezen.
And Johnny Taylor.
Hell yeah. So what are we doing today? We're here to have a Destroyer Roundtable. We got a couple of extra guests in the house. But before we get to that, I want to start off with just a little history on Mr. Weezen and Johnny Taylor. So let me know, Weezen, how'd you get into Kiss, brother?
Oh, man, saw the movie Kiss Meets the Phantom, and before that I really wasn't a big fan, and I saw that and I went to the store. We used to have a store in the area called Bell Scott, and I told the clerk I needed the brand new Kiss album. He gave me Love Gun.
Right.
Ever since then I bought them as they've come out.
Oh yeah, so Love Gun was your first.
First
awesome,
Kiss album,
dude.
I took it to Show and Tell.
Yeah, awesome.
In like third grade.
So how old were you at this point?
Third grade. Oh, let's see.
Oh,
how
wow.
old are you in third grade?
Yeah, I don't know. 7, 8, 9, yeah. Something like that. So, what did you think about the Love Gun with the actual Love Gun on the inside?
Still got it. Still
did
got
you
it.
Pop it as
still
a kid?
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, I still got it.
Right.
But, I mean, it's popped, but it's still there.
Yeah. That's what's up. Yeah. Oh, yeah. Okay, so what about you, Mr. Johnny Taylor?
Somehow or another, when I was about 6 or 7, there was a couple albums laying around. I'm not sure if they're my parents' albums or one of my foster brothers maybe picked them up and gave them to us because they thought they were kind of getting lame, I guess. They were listening to Rush and...
Right.
Kiss was, they were a little bit older than I was, so Kiss was kind of getting, you know, with kids and stuff. But Destroyer, we had Destroyer and Kiss Alive, and then they bought us Love Gun and Dynasty further down the road. But yeah, a big hit.
Yes.
Right. So that's pretty cool. One thing I also want to talk about too, as far as having Weezen here, is he was in a band when we were kids, and they were called Strange Ways, and we kind of stole the name for our podcast. So what do you think about that, Weezen?
Well, you know, I stole it from Kiss, so
right.
I mean, you know, like I said, you know, it's not actually stealing it; it's just borrowing it, paying homage.
There you go. Hell yeah.
To the gods.
All right, so here's what we're going to be talking about today. We're going to be doing our Destroyer roundtable. So I want to go around the room and just kind of figure out when we all kind of got our hands on Destroyer. So we'll just start over there on Johnny's side of the room. When did you first get Destroyer, man?
I had to be 7 years old, I guess, 76, 77. I'm not sure if my parents bought it for me. All I know is that we played it and fought over it every day for years to come.
Hell yeah. I mean, that's a classic fucking album. What about you, Weezen? Your first Destroyer?
Well, probably the following Christmas, I think my parents and my grandparents kind of stocked me up on all the back ones that I didn't have yet. You
that's
know, Destroyer, Alive, Dressed to Kill, you know,
right.
all the ones that I'd missed so far. But, you know, so probably the Christmas after, I think they originally aired Kiss Meets the Phantom on, like, Halloween.
Right.
So,
right.
following December, I was stocked up.
Hell yeah. So what did you think as... Love Gun was your first album, right? So you had all four guys singing on it. So what was it like, you know, to have your first Kiss experience having all four guys? Because it wasn't like that for me.
Well, it was kind of weird because, you know, I had seen the movie and I knew each one's, you know, individual character and personality and everything. But then when I got the album and I'm listening to it, I'm looking on the label and it says, like, Stanley Simmons and Stanley on this song, and it doesn't sound like them singing. I'm like, that don't sound like Paul Stanley. That sounds like Peter Criss singing, you know? So I
right.
had to figure out, you know, that that's the writers, and then, you know, the other
that's
person
exactly
was the actual
what
sing,
happened to us
singer
as
on
kids.
There, too.
We were
so.
Talking about that before.
We were like, we thought maybe, you know,
the
Ace sang Cold Gin.
Right, exactly.
We know that there was writing credits.
Sing
yeah.
Parasite.
Right. Yeah, it takes a while.
But yeah,
you don't
it seems
know who
like,
to ask about that shit when you're a kid. You just gotta learn it on your own. You know, what
it
I mean?
Seems like once you know their personalities and their character, you can just tell. Well, this is Ace. That's Ace's voice. That's Peter's
right.
voice. You know.
That's,
and you look down there and it says Stanley and Simmons, and you're like, well, it only sounds like one singer. So that
right.
was kind of confusing. But yeah, it was really cool because you know, like you said, that was the first time Ace sang on an album.
Yeah, it's killer too.
Shock.
What a great way
yeah.
to start.
Yeah.
Shock
yeah.
me.
Yeah.
You know?
Right.
I mean, That's still probably my favorite guitar lead of all time. You know, just the solo.
Now, Steel One and Strange Ways is pretty damn good, too.
Oh, you're not kidding
guitar,
about that.
You know, that whole song, I mean, that...
Yeah.
I mean, the guitar just sounds heavy, you know. It's heavy, big, and, you know, that lead is insane, you know.
Yeah, I love that Tony gets on that particular track. You know, it's real... Mm-hmm. I don't even know how to describe... You know what we're talking about.
Yeah.
You know exactly what we're talking about.
Right, right.
All
right,
so... What about you, Clinton? When did you get your first hands on Destroyer?
Well, I got it when I was in about fifth grade or so. Fifth, maybe sixth grade. And Main Street Records.
Right.
Where they were, that guy would do, well, we've talked about Main Street before.
Right. And I love that place.
Yeah, I mean, we always got
fucking gold
all kinds of Kiss records there.
$4 a pop.
But
like take whatever inserts and just like transfer them to whatever record you were buying, you know. Say you're buying Destroyer, you can get all the like four solo album posters and stick them in there. I mean,
that's cool.
It's kind of a dick thing to do, but we wanted the shit so bad as kids, we were willing to steal it, you know.
Well, anyway, yeah, so before I knew there was Main Street Records, there was the guy that set up at the flea market at the fairgrounds. And, you know, once I got older and was able to go to the Main Street Records, then I was like, oh, this is the same dude.
Right.
And he sets up at the fairgrounds too, or whatever. So I got all kinds of Kiss records from him before I even went to Main Street Records. But anyway, I got it there, and... when I got it home, I thought it was a little weird because I had heard all these songs on Alive 2.
Right.
Because that's the first one I got. And so I'm like,
so
I heard the Kiss
production.
Yeah, I heard the Kiss version of like God of Thunder and King of the Nighttime World and Detroit and all these songs, like the live killer
Live
version.
Yeah.
And, you know, so to hear the... I don't know, Kiss is just always really good live, I guess, especially back in the day, because, you know, I can't say I was disappointed when I heard Destroyer, but it was so much different, and I was still really young then, so it was really, you know, weird to hear the, you know, I didn't understand all the musical differences, and studio, and live, and all this and that, and sound effects, and whatnot.
Watered down versions of what you're used to.
Yeah. So I was like, man, this is nowhere near as heavy.
Same thing happened to me with like Alive and then the previous records, because I had Alive before any of the first Hot of Hell or Dressed to Kill.
Right.
So it's like when I started going back and heard those versions, it's like, damn, that's not heavy at all. You know, compared
Kiss,
to Alive.
Well, yeah. Well, Kiss is such a good live band.
Hell yeah.
When you hear the live albums first, it's hard to compare the studio albums to them.
That's
there's
very
such
true.
A difference.
Yeah.
Difference.
They're so good raw and live.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah.
I mean, they're good both ways. They're good both ways.
But that's true. Mm-hmm. All right, so what about you, D-Rock? What did you think the first time you got Destroyed?
Mine was a little bit later in life, though. Mine was in between eighth grade, summer of eighth grade, freshman year. Actually, it was Charlie Soult and I were hanging out, and we ended up going up to the mall and stuff, up to Music Vision, and I was flipping through the Kiss records and I saw the Destroyer album.
Oh yeah, that's such a great cover.
Ended up buying it, you know, because I was like, oh yeah, Joe, you know, he had that Kiss sticker on the back of his bass, you know, so I was like, fuck it, you know, I bought it.
Had you heard like the Live 2 versions of Detroit or King of the Night?
Not
World?
Yet.
Really?
I had.
So
I mean,
heard
I had
fresh.
Heard King of the Nighttime World, but I hadn't heard like the Detroit, you know, and the God of Thunder, you know, live version yet, you know, so I didn't have live yet, so I got that first, so I heard it the actual right way.
So did you love it? What?
Dude,
it's just a classic.
It's Kiss,
right?
How could you not?
I feel you. My first thing with Destroyer, man, I got it. It was the third one I got. I got Dressed to Kill was my first one. Then I got Unmasked, just because I really liked the cover. And then with my week's allowance, the next week, I picked Destroyer. You know, I was just basing them off their covers at, like, Camelot. Like, man, I want just another Kiss record. So I got Destroyer just because the fucking cover looks so cool. But I'd already heard a lot of the other, you know, shit just on TV and different things like that. But I fucking love Destroyer, and I particularly love a lot of the songs, like we were talking about earlier, Weezin, is, you know, the ones that really never were the big hits, like Sweet Pain and Great Expectations and shit. Hearing those as a kid, I was like, wow, Kiss does a lot of different types of music, you know? Because I had already been listening to Unmasked, and it was like, that's completely different than Dressed to Kill, you know what I mean?
Right.
Then I get Destroyer, and it's like, wow, these dudes do it all, you know? Okay, I want to know what you guys think about when, you know, the opening thing, you know, like the radio thing, the announcer. What do you think about that?
Well, what are we waiting for?
Well, I always thought that it had to be the most important announcer in the world to be on Kiss's album.
Right.
You know, it's like the most important reporter on the planet.
Yeah.
Just like I was saying, I was 7 years old. We thought...
Yeah, this dude was like in with Kiss.
It had to be the man to be in with Kiss. Right.
Kiss were like superheroes, so...
Right.
I mean, they were like... They were like Superman and Batman and shit for the cool kids.
Yeah. That's a good way to put it.
The kids that wanted to get laid.
Yeah. Did you guys know that that's actually Bob Ezrin that did that whole announcement thing at the beginning?
I didn't know.
And he... And, like, the part where it has Rock and Roll All Night, you know, in the car, they actually broadcast that from the studio on, like, a shortwave radio to the car and recorded it out there. So that's kind of trippy, Bob Ezrin, man, the king of studio trickeries, you know?
Yeah. I remember being a little bit too scared to listen to that with all the lights off when I was a kid. You know, for some reason, just a clank of the dishes or whatever he's doing at the beginning there.
It's like you're making it.
Then walking out and that muffled, I Want to Rock and Roll All Night, it was that and... not to want to change off the subject, but the beginning of Gene's solo album, I used to not be able to listen to
that
in the dark where he's laughing.
Right, that's some creepy sound stuff, dude. Right. It's like precursor to King Diamond, them,
exactly.
Like that, you know?
Right.
Which always creeped me out as a kid, too, you know, the beginning of them. That's totally off the subject, but anyways, so yeah, the opening thing, I just found out about that being Bob Ezrin and shit recently on one of those Kiss websites. It's pretty fucking cool, and I don't know, man. One thing we need to talk about, too, is, like, both of the guys that are sitting in with us today, that's Weezin and Johnny Taylor, they both, like, have hardcore Kiss influence, and I wanted to just talk about that a little bit. You want to start first, Johnny? Tell them what you do and how Kiss kind of made you that way, if you know what I'm saying.
Well, like I was saying, I was born in 1970. Somehow we had Destroyer and Kiss Alive laying around the house, probably my parents' albums. My older brother's albums, and just from that point on, I would put on my own little show, jumping on the bed, singing all the songs, put my little Kiss show on. I wanted to do one of the songs off of Destroyer, matter of fact, Great Expectations, I wanted to do for the talent show. But when my mom heard me singing the song, she's like, you can't sing that at a talent show. So I had to switch up. So I had Schools Out, Alice Cooper, and was going to do Is It My Body?
Nice. Hmm.
She heard me practicing that. She said, you can't do that song either.
What did she want you to do? Some Donnie Marie?
No, I ended up doing Come and Get It, Badfinger.
Oh, I can see that.
If you've heard that
one. Yeah, I know that one.
But I chickened out, and I didn't even go. I chickened out, never made it to the time show at all.
You could have been huge on Great Expectations, dude. You never know.
But like I said, Kiss
was a big influence. She didn't like the breast part or what?
Yeah, the breast part, which at the time when you're 8 years old, that doesn't even, you don't even comprehend what they're really saying.
Right.
You just like the song.
Yeah.
And it's a good song. A lot of people frown on that song in particular, but...
I dig on it. We'll get to that on our rundown here in a little while. But you still gotta go in. Keep going.
Yeah, like I was saying with the influence, with the makeup, I never got into the makeup when I was a kid, except for maybe my mom's makeup when I was 4 years old. But it kind of molded me, Kiss in general, and molded me into wanting to be in the entertainment business, wanting to be a rock and roller. And as I got older, the makeup influence come out, so now I'm a clown for hire.
Right.
And that's not a plug.
You can plug yourself. You know. Go give yourself a plug, dude.
But it works out good. And it feels good to get up there and pretend that you're someone special when you're entertaining a bunch of people. It is what it is.
Gives you a good feeling.
It gives you a good feeling.
You make other people happy.
And it's all because of Kiss.
Right. And I think that's pretty cool.
In my world, anyway.
Right. Tell them a little bit about Filthy Frank for people out there that need to know.
Well, it's just, you know, a lot of times over-the-hill parties for ladies, like their 50th birthday, something special. I'll get a call, do a little gig, you know, gag gifts, balloons, little striptease act. But it's a comical thing. It's not nothing crude. Unless, you know, pay a little extra.
Right.
And I do a little pants drop.
The crudeness is negotiable.
Yeah, but right. It's a pants drop thing, you know, classic clown. It's a hit. You can see it on YouTube if you look hard enough.
Look him up. Yeah. Well, you search Filthy Frank.
Yeah, Filthy Frank, the hobo stripper.
Filthy Frank, the hobo stripper. Yeah. He's with us right now on the Strange Ways Kiss podcast. Actually, he's not in his full regalia, but...
I'm off today.
He looks really cool when he does it. So check that out for sure out there, Kiss Army. All right, I want to know about you, Weezin. You got a little history of a little blood vomiting and all kinds of cool shit. Let us know what's up.
Back in the day, of course, you know, I wanted to be Batman and Superman and all that kind of great stuff.
In the Underoos days.
Kiss Meets the Phantom came out, and I decided, well, you know, now I'm going to have to be a superstar, superhero rock star, you know? So from then on, I kind of wanted to do the band thing and everything, so... when the time came, put together a band, you know, I was, my favorite song, well, I can't say it's my favorite song, but Strange Ways, you know, I mean, I love that song to death.
Yeah.
So I convinced the guys to call us Strange Ways. They liked the whole concept too. You know, I always wanted to get up on stage, and that was because of Kiss. And I always said that our band, you know, because we kind of sound Guns N' Roses-ish at the time, you know, that was what was going on, you know, 89, 90.
Right.
Was a cross between, you know, Alice Cooper, Guns N' Roses, partying with Kiss backstage at a King Diamond concert. So, you know, I mean, that was kind of what we were trying to do, you know.
And what a better name. Yeah, what a better name. Strange Ways.
Strange Ways, right. Exactly.
Right.
And, you know, I mean, I incorporated the blood, you know, all Gene Simmons, you know, I got that into the show. A Room with the View is when we used to do that. So, you know, but I mean, it all come from wanting to get up on stage and, you know, making a spectacle of myself for people to take a look at and hopefully have a good time watching and, you know, dig the music too. And I mean, it all came from Kiss.
So that's where it's at. And we were fortunate enough to open for you guys when Clinton and I were about, 14, something like that, maybe 15.
Probably mostly in the back room drinking.
Right. We didn't get much contact with Weezin, but Cosmic Dave hung out with me just because I knew him from B&G, you know, but... you guys were great. We kind of sucked in those days, but we, you know, we were too young, but we got an early start. But we always thought it was cool that we got to play with Strange Ways. I can remember thinking that was real cool. You know, you guys look cool. Plus, you know, being Kiss heads ourselves, it was real fucking cool.
And
blood and all that.
It was always about trying to put on a show, too. You know, a lot of bands really didn't do that at that time, you know.
It was cool. And you guys had probably the first local band on that in that particular club that I ever saw that had, like, Fog. Yeah. And a light show.
And a mosh pit. That was my first experience with a mosh pit.
Yeah.
And I wasn't really sure what was going on. But someone got thrown into me, and I elbowed someone in the head, and we had to get out of there.
Yeah. Good times at the tornado shelter, as it, you know, it was a little scene back then.
It was.
Around here.
Definitely
it was pretty cool.
Oh, yeah.
You never know. Someday someone might write a little book about it or something. I've heard talk of it. I really have. But it is what it is. Alright, so one other thing I want to know for both of you guys, because all three of us, normal guys, have talked about it on the podcast already, but I want to know, when was the first time you saw Kiss Live, and what was that like for you? You can go ahead, Weezin, what you got?
Very first time for me was 82, Creatures of the Night Tour.
Oh man. Who opened the show?
It was Night Ranger opening up for the Plasmatics, opening up for Kiss.
Wow, Plasmatics.
Kiel Opera House.
Was Mendio with the chainsaw and all that stuff?
Yeah. It was crazy. Yeah, they let her do all that stuff because, of course, you know, Kiss have always been the kind of band that they don't shy away from a good opening act.
Yes.
You know,
that's true.
You know, they put on the best show they can, so, you know, they want the best opening acts that they can get, you know, and they, you know, usually let their opening acts do whatever they want to do as far as, you know, their show goes because they understand how it is to try to put on their show.
Well, they've been in those shoes.
Right, exactly. When, you know, they were first coming out, you know, people wouldn't let them put up the Kiss logo, so they had to, like, sneak it in and stuff like that.
Right.
So, you know, they knew how it was, but, yep, Creatures of the Night.
So what did you think the first time you saw him? Did you know that Vinny had replaced Ace, or was it, like... was it sprung on you or what?
It was kind of sprung on me, actually.
Really? What were you thinking?
I was like, what is this? What's going on here? You know, I thought maybe Ace was sick or something like that, you know, and then I didn't even, you know that he wasn't really on the album very much, you know, that he was just on the cover, you know. And
right.
Yeah, so. I was at the same concert, and it was sprung on me. I was surprised. Really? First time I'd seen Vinny.
Wow.
Another thing that was sprung on me, not to change the subject too much, but was Bruce Kulick in for Mark St. John on the Animalize tour.
On the Animalize?
Yeah, I didn't, you know, I was expecting to see Mark St. John, you know, and it was Bruce Kulick. I was like, who the hell is that? You know, but, you know.
I like Bruce a lot.
Oh, yeah.
Bruce He's my awesome. Favorite besides Ace as far as Kiss guitarist, but I could see that being like, what the hell?
Yeah.
Because it was like, you know, I found out recently on one of those podcasts that Bruce actually played some guitar on Animalize.
Oh,
that weird.
Huh.
Like a lot of ghost guitar leads and shit. And he wasn't ever credited, obviously, but I guess he was the perfect fit, you know what I mean?
Right.
So what was your first Kiss show, Johnny?
My first show, I believe, was 78 or 79. And John Cougar Mellencamp opened up for him.
Yeah? He was probably just John Cougar then, though.
Yeah, I was 7 or 8. And we were way at the top. Kiss, they looked like ants on a stage jumping around.
What tour was it on? Like Dynasty? Or was it like just the Love Gun
79?
Stage?
I don't remember.
Dynasty,
the stage was so small. I know they rose up out of the stage.
Oh, that's Dynasty.
To start the
for
show.
Sure. Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
That's
but,
cool.
But yeah, it was a hit.
Yes.
That's awesome. So you got to see them do actual solo album cuts, huh?
Right. And what was so crazy about the show was, like I said, we were very young, me and my brother. And a lot of the people were dressed up as Kiss characters.
Right.
And there was a guy sitting right in front of us. It looked like Paul Stanley's twin. I mean,
really?
He had just the right hair, just the right makeup, the outfit, and we were just in awe.
Wow.
Because, yeah, we're so young.
Right. Yeah, I guess I never really thought about that there were people already dressing up that much, even back then, you know? Because you go to a Kiss show now, and there's, like, different sets of Kiss running around all over the place.
Well, I think that's what Destroyer did.
Right.
Destroyer made Kiss good, you know, mainstream enough for the 4-year-olds, the 14-year-olds, and the 40-year-olds,
that's true.
You know?
That's something we need to talk about, too, is like we were talking about a little bit before we started recording, is Kiss was kind of like almost like a goth-heavy, street kind of heavy band prior to Destroyer.
Yes.
And, you know, obviously Bob Ezrin had a lot to do with that. But, you know what, I don't think that it's necessarily a bad thing, because I do like Destroyer a lot. I mean, what did you think?
Yeah, there's a lot of great songs on there.
So, I mean, Destroyer, you had Destroyer first, right, Weezin?
No, you had
Love Gun.
Love Gun first.
Okay. So none of us really... Did you have any of the first ones before Destroyer?
My first two albums were Destroyer and Kiss Alive.
Okay.
So we pounded them out back to back constantly.
Oh, yeah. That's like the greatest hits almost. Put those two together, you know what I mean? I just always wonder what it felt like for the Kiss fan that was into them from the original shit when they were dark and evil, you know, and then all of a sudden, you know, Beth comes on.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right, right.
And I don't want to take anything away from Beth, and we'll talk about it when we get there, but, you know, it's definitely way different.
Yes.
Right. You know?
Well, it seemed like they changed for Destroyer. They got more mainstream to broaden their audience, but then with Rock and Roll Over, they kind of went back to the kind of Kiss sleaze kind of feel.
And, yeah, and that was
it. Love Gun followed in the same vein as Rock and Roll Over, really. So it's kind of like they, once they got the mass people, they went back to being Kiss that was before, but they were already such mass appeal that, you know, it was a Kiss with the same vibe as before, but for the masses.
Right.
You know? So, I mean,
I read it's somewhere.
Like they changed on Destroyer, but then they went back to their roots, kind of sort of with
to Rock and Roll Over,
even Love Gun and Rock and Roll Over. Yeah.
One thing I had read somewhere that you know how they were banging out albums 2-3 you know every couple of months, and they had recorded Rock and Roll Over as going back to their roots because at first there was a backlash against Destroyer, you know, with all the original Kiss fans.
Right.
But by the time Rock and Roll Over was out, Destroyer was starting to become a huge hit. And so supposedly that's why they went back to almost like a... You know how Love Gun is a little more produced than Rock and Roll Over?
Yeah.
And a lot of people think that like Destroyer and Love Gun are kind of like a companion, whereas it's like Dressed to Kill and Rock and Roll Over go together.
Right.
Which is a strange way to look at it, but if you think about it, it's kind of true. You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Production-wise. I never did either, but I heard it on one of those podcasts, so I was like, that's an interesting point.
True,
right? I can't remember whose it was, but...
There's a lot of stuff I've learned about Kiss within the last 4 years on the computer.
Right, the internet.
But before then, I never knew the ins and outs and the, you know, the background stories. As a youngin', getting Destroyer or growing up on it, we didn't think about the ins and outs. We thought Kiss played every song, every member played every song.
Right.
We didn't know about Ace not playing on this one.
Yeah, like you didn't know about Dick Wagner.
Right.
And we thought everything was great. There was nothing, there was never a bad song. I mean, it was just, everything was great about it.
Right. You know, for years, I didn't know that Dick Wagner did this solo to Sweet Pain, and I thought it sounded like Ace.
Yeah, I thought it was Ace. I've never known.
Yeah, and I actually prefer it to the one that's on the Resurrected, just because, you know, it's ingrained in that.
That's what we're used to.
Exactly. Right. Exactly. So when you hear something else, it's like, what? That doesn't sound right. You know what I mean?
That's what we've been listening to for over
since we were kids. Yeah. So it's like, the new one, the Ace one, even though I love Ace a lot, you know, it's just not quite as cool.
Plus, like what we were talking about, that sounds more like a scratch.
Yeah, it's
track
more of like
than
he might have just laid down scratch solo lead and never got around to actually doing something cool. But that's what they had left, you know what I mean?
Right.
And it's cool to finally hear something different.
Back at that time too, he might have not showed up to do anything more. You know,
he's
pretty unpredictable
card game again. You know,
pretty unpredictable at that time.
Yeah, that's just like, you know, Kiss stuff talks about it a lot. That's where they realized that the sum was bigger than the parts and all that kind of shit. So, in some ways, it's a big moment in history, you know what I mean? Mm-hmm. So it's kind of cool. But, so should we go, should we just get into this round table?
Yes!
What should we do?
Let's do it.
Okay,
do it.
So.
Do it!
We're going to start off, and we're going to go track by track. So let's start off with the first cut. That's Detroit Rock City. I want to know your thoughts on it, each and every one of you fuckers. So what's up, Johnny Taylor, on that side
Well,
of the roof?
Of course, it's a great song. My older brother, Tom, we used to fight over the record player, and he would play that song back to back, over and over and over again. So when I would finally get my turn to play with the record player when he was gone, I'd always skip that song and go right to King of the Nighttime World.
Really? Because you just were burnt out?
Yeah, I was burnt out thanks to my older brother, Tom.
Right.
And with side two, we always skipped over the first two songs and went straight to Shout Out Loud. So I never really even listened to the first two songs, Sweet Pain, Flaming Youth, until years later.
Right.
And like you were saying, like Johnny Weason was saying, them were great songs. Great songs.
Right.
And Sweet Pain may be my favorite song of the album.
Wow. We'll definitely have to go down the list of what our favorites are after we go down the rundown. But let me hear what your thoughts are on Detroit Rock City, Weezy.
Well, you know, like I said, you know, I thought the beginning was a little bit scary as a kid, you know, listening to all that and hearing the muffled voices singing rock and roll all night and everything. But, you know, it just exploded, you know, into the music. I mean, it went from the sound effects or the sound portion, soundbite thing, into the music so well that it just exploded, and it's almost like you could see him on stage doing that, you know, as you were listening to it, you know, because, you know, you always had that visual of Kiss because they're such a visual band, you know, but I thought it was great, you know, like I said, some of the classic songs on that album are not some of my faves, but, you know, I mean, that just the guitar gets you pumped up just listening you know, it just gets you pumped up and ready to go, and there's really not a bad part of that song, you know what I mean? It's like, it's perfect. Almost,
you know,
so,
beat it.
Exactly.
There's a lot of shit going on. It's, you know, Kiss has certain songs that are epic Kiss tunes. That's definitely one of them.
Right, right.
We talk about that a lot. Like, that's one. Black Diamond is another. Some Kiss songs are kind of simple, but some aren't, you know?
Well, you know, that's another thing, too. You know, a lot of musicians in the talk about Kiss not being, you know, very talented as far as, you know, playing their instruments.
They're crazy, you know, when they say that.
I do too, because, you know, you hear these guitar players and stuff that I've worked with and talked to, and like, you know, let's try Detroit Rock City. Oh man, that's too easy. Let's do that. And then when they go down to actually do it, they can never actually do it right. You know, they don't have that feel. They don't know exactly how it goes or something. So I mean, you know, there's got to be something to it when it's hard to play, you know.
Right.
So, I mean,
like they just don't have the understanding.
Exactly.
To it. You know, it's like they hear it. They know how they want to play it, but they just don't understand it.
Right.
Yeah. They don't have Kiss in their veins.
Right. Running through their fingertips.
They don't bleed Kiss.
Right. Right. People like us, though, I mean, we've all been listening to them since we were little, so it's like...
It's like ingrained into
I base
into
all
psyche.
Music off of Kiss. Like, everything about my whole life is kind of based off of Kiss, and that sounds kind of fucked up,
totally.
But it's totally true.
I mean, we've talked about it before. We would be totally different people.
Right. if it wasn't for this one band.
Yeah. Right, exactly.
They're like, you know how people say like weed's like a gateway drug? Well, Kiss is a gateway band, you know what I'm saying?
Right.
If it wasn't for sure. Kiss, I don't think I would have became the musician, like the super music head that I am. You know
right,
what I mean?
Right.
And they just opened up everything for me.
Oh, yeah. Dude, I used to have dreams. Like, I grew up, like, out in the country and shit. Right. And, like, I remember this one dream in particular where Kiss, like, the limousine broke down. And they're, like, walking. And they come and, like, stayed with us and, like, ate dinner and shit. And then we, like, had their limousine fixed or some
really?
Shit. Like, but, they're like, in their makeup and full costume and everything,
right.
You know.
Where did they have their makeup on, or did they have those little handkerchiefs where they had to lift them up?
They had their whole makeup, you know, and that's just like, you know.
Yeah, I used to stand in front of the mirror and dance around like I was Gene to the records, you know.
Right. Shit. Oh, yeah.
The things you think about when you're a kid, you know.
My grandma and grandpa used to live right behind us, and you know, as soon as I got into Kiss, you know, I'd be like raking a pile of leaves, and my grandpa would come out and start the leaves. I'd have my Kiss makeup on. I'd be standing on the picnic table with my tennis racket, with the leaves burning in front of me for the smoke and stuff. So you
that's
know,
that's awesome.
Of course,
hell yeah.
Yeah, I think by the time I was 9 years old, I was pretty much doing the Kiss Live album front to back, my own little show, jumping up and down on the bed.
Mm-hmm. Right,
I had pretty much the whole thing down.
That's awesome. So we're on Detroit Rock City. What did you think about it, Clinton? The first time you really heard it and shit.
Well, the first time I heard it was on Alive 2. So, I mean...
So do you think, like, the best Kiss show should always start with Detroit Rock City? Because I had Alive first, and I always want Deuce first. You know what I'm saying? That's how I picture Kiss Live in my mind. Is it Detroit for you, though?
What's I don't up? Know. I would say so.
Yeah, I could see that. I mean, that's a great way to start it.
But, you know, I love the song, but I mean, anymore, it's kind of like, it's a great song, and I agree, it's one of their epic songs, but it's one that's been played to death.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
You know, it's not as bad... anywhere near as bad as like Rock and Roll All Night is for me.
Right.
But like, you know.
Oh, I feel you. You've heard it a lot.
Yeah, that's a whole lot. Ones you know. You hear the most. So.
Yeah.
But I do love it.
Yeah.
And it was weird to hear, you know, the sound effects and stuff like that.
Yeah, going the car on crash and everything.
Yeah, because.
Even the car noises are in there that obviously aren't on the live, too.
Right. Mm. Yeah, so it was. You know, there was a lot. It was really strange hearing Destroyer, period, after hearing, you know, most of the songs on Alive 2, or at least, you know, some of the songs.
Right, right. For sure. All right, well, what about you, D-Rock? True Destroyer experience?
Well, keeping it in tune with the actual album of Destroyer, the whole beginning, I agree with them, is epic. You know, with all the sound effects, you know, the car deal and everything. And I mean, it's such an awesome song. You know, this, to me, this is like the album's anthem song.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's such a strong song. It comes out, smacks you in the face, you know. And
there's a lot of anthems on
Well, there is. Yeah, every album's got one. You know, it's like we've always talked before. Every album's got its great song, and every album's got its shitter. You know, but this is like the you couldn't have picked a better song and a better way to start off the album.
Yeah,
right.
You know, I mean, the whole theatrical lead-in. You know, with the radio and the car and the crash and. Mm-hmm.
Yeah, it definitely tells like a
you
story.
Know, yeah, I mean, you couldn't have picked a better song, a better way to jive off this album.
Right,
you know?
Right.
I think you might be right about that. As far as Detroit, my main things about it that I love the most, besides just, I don't know, everything about it totally rocks balls, but particularly it's like the first song that Kiss had that really had an instrument, like a dual solo, you know, Thin Lizzy kind of deal, where... you know, they kind of did a little bit at the end of Deuce, but, you know, it's not, like, a big spotlighted part, and to me, that's badass, because I'm a guitar player, and that was the first time I probably heard a dual solo with harmony, you know, it's fucking awesome, and it's just, Another thing I thought when I first heard Detroit Rock City was, it's like, wow, man, Peter Criss is really fucking going apeshit compared to what he usually does. You know what I mean? Yeah, he's right. Usually pretty simple. Yeah, and all right. Of a sudden, it's like it's almost like a double bass type of beat. You know what I mean? Yeah. And it always blew me away, and I thought it's a great way to start the album, like you said. I mean, you really can't. I can't think of any other song that could start this record.
Yeah, it's just a rocking song.
Yeah, it's straight up. It's one of the ones, like you guys have all said, we've heard it a million times, but it still rules, and it still holds a special spot for me. And I think a lot of that's the Kiss Animalize Live Uncensored. I had that before Destroyer, and you know they start on that too. Mm-hmm. And on there, it's really fucking awesome. So I always kind of wanted to see what it sounded like in the studio.
Well, it's overplayed because it's a great song.
That's true. I mean, there's definitely a reason why it's overplayed, you know. But Detroit Rock City, I love it. Another thing we haven't talked about as far as this particular song is, you know, just the inside of the record, how they really push that song because it's got the lyrics on the inner sleeve, you know, and whereas none of the other ones have that, you know.
Right.
Not toward just one particular song. So I guess Kiss really, they knew it was going to be one of those songs, you know what I mean? And another thing we could talk about too is, like, you've probably heard the, like, Acrobat thing. You know, it's basically Detroit Rock City. It's got the same riff, you know. I think they just recycled it a little bit, but to better effect, I'd say, you know. But yeah, so Detroit Rock City, we all give it the thumbs up.
Oh, for sure.
Oh, we go straight into the next one. What's that going to be? Who knows what it is? I know you all do. Who doesn't know what it is, right?
It's got that winding guitar right at the beginning, which supposedly is the ambulance that's coming to the rescue of the person that just crashed in the car on Detroit Rock City.
That's such a trip that you thought of that, because I was just listening to a podcast where they have this whole idea of Destroyer as the concept record.
It's such a great intro to the song. Just the whining guitar just gets you.
Oh, yeah.
Gets me.
Gets me too, man. And, you know, everything about the song, but, you know. The whining guitar as an ambulance is a new concept to me, but I totally buy into that. It does make perfect sense. And one thing I think about every time I think about that part, though, is the 96 reunion when Ace is fucking standing there, and all of a sudden the speakers started lifting up, remember?
Yeah, that was the shit.
I was like, oh my fucking god, this is badass.
Right. Awesome.
You know, I can even remember during Deuce, I was thinking, man, where the fuck are all the Marshalls, dude? I was expecting the whole wall of Marshalls, Kiss style.
Right.
And they only had a couple stacks out. Then Ace started feeding back that note, and then all of a sudden they rose. And I was in ninth row on the floor, and it got louder, dude. They weren't, I don't know if the fucking PA just bumped it, because I'm sure those weren't fully loaded cabs, you know?
Right.
But it did get perceivably louder, which I thought was just so awesome, you know?
And then with the drums kicking in, it's just a badass way to start a song.
Oh, yeah.
I think my favorite part of King of the Nighttime World, though, is probably the ending, or close to the ending there, where he starts building, I'm the king.
Yeah.
I'm the king.
Yeah.
And it just builds up so great there, you know, because you expect it to possibly be over. The song's getting to the end. Then the first time you hear it, anyway, you expect, oh, wow, that was a pretty cool song. Then it's just building back up again, and it goes through a whole other, you know, part. And I think that's my favorite part, though, is closer to the end.
Yeah, and when you're a kid listening to it, you're thinking, this is the Paul Stanley superhero song.
Right.
He's the king. He's the king. And that's what we thought. He's the king.
Yes.
And this is
I still think this
is his song. This is definitely a Paul Stanley song.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, I love the verses too, man. You know, being a kid, it's, you know, you identify it with it a lot about being at school and shit, and how it sucks, and you just want to be out all night partying.
Yeah, I blame some of my childhood rebellion on that song.
Really? Yeah.
Yes.
I could dig it. You know, this one has co-writes too. It was like Kim Fowley and I forget the other guy's name. You can actually find it on YouTube, the original demo that was done by this other band.
Oh,
it was like the Hollywood Stars something.
Yeah.
And it's horrifying, man. Kiss made it their own, you know what I mean? That's why they do get the writing. Paul has the writing credit, so it's kind of like what they did with that Argent tune. They kind of made it their own and rewrote it, you know?
Right.
But it was for the longest time my favorite song on the whole album. It's such an anthem, you know? And the guitar works killer. And another one where you've never heard Peter Criss do that kind of drumming, you know, where he's just rolling on the snare through the whole fucking song.
Right.
And it's killer, dude.
It's killer.
And it was the biggest drum sound Kiss ever had, you know what I mean? They were, I guess, you know, they could afford to stay in a studio. All their previous records were, like, done in 3 weeks. This one took, like, over, I think it was a few months even.
Right.
That's crazy for them, I bet.
Yeah.
You know, they weren't used to working like that.
Yeah, they were
like
probably getting sick of being in the studio.
They were probably like, fuck, man, this guy keeps making us do it over and over and over. But, man, with the end result, you know, they had to be happy. Yeah. How could you not?
Yeah.
All right, so King of the Nighttime World, what are you thinking about it, Clint?
Well, you know what I think.
Yeah.
So.
What about you, D-Rock?
Oh, I love it. I can't wait to see what our end process is
going
to be when we get it done in the studio.
Yeah, we got the music recorded. We haven't done any vocals on it yet, but it's in the hopper, so stay tuned for that, our cover of King of the Nighttime World here.
When we were recording that song, I actually wish I would have had my video thing going on my phone, because the faces you were making on the drums was hilarious.
It took me a long time to do the drums for that one, because I'm not much of a drummer, but...
Thank God for punching in.
Right. All right, so King of the Nighttime World, we all give it a big, fat thumbs up. That's just one of the best ones.
One of my favorite Kiss songs, period.
Yeah, it would be on my top 10 of all time Kiss tunes, I think.
Yeah, it could be. It's just such a
strong one, man, and it's great. It's like the 1-2 punch coming off straight out of Detroit Rock City. You might expect to hear a Gene song or something, and then they just rail right into this great song. Paul's still at the top of his game.
Dude, I love that song.
I do too, man. And I really like, too, you know, just the fact that when the verse first starts, it's just drums and one guitar, and then it kicks back in with the rest of the band's killing.
Yep.
So, yeah. All right, so that'll bring us down to God of Thunder.
The scary song.
Right.
Yeah. The one that scared us.
Right, it didn't scare me that much because I had heard it on Live 2 first, and I thought the Destroyer ones just kind of, I love it, but it wasn't quite as badass in my mind. I don't know what you guys thought.
It wasn't
about
one of my favorite songs, but my older brother Tom, that was his song.
Yeah.
And he would play Detroit Rock City and God of Thunder, King of the Nighttime World, and then he wouldn't listen to the last song on the album. And I was the opposite. Skip Detroit Rock City, you know, like I was saying earlier.
I'd say God of Thunder is one of my favorites, but it's because I heard it first on Live 2.
Right.
So,
Jesus,
and it was just
evil on Live 2.
Fuck yeah, that's badass, dude.
Yeah, it sounds a lot heavier on Live 2.
Yeah.
The thing I love about that song is the guitar tones, man. I mean, it sounds like animals.
Yeah,
you know,
it's
like
a wolf howling.
Shit,
right,
you know.
It's a lot of cool shit.
Yeah,
it's Bob Ezrin's kids running around with some walkie-talkies that made all the sounds. I kind of like the extra sounds mixed in, you know. I didn't like it as much at first, you know, but when you, I don't know, you grow older, your perceptions change a little bit.
Right,
and I see it as a production piece now, you know what I mean? Especially on the Resurrected, dude, it sounds so fucking thick, man. Yeah. I love it, love it. I also like Ace's lead a lot on that one. It's not in his normal mode, you know what I mean? It's pretty cool. A lot of the songs on this album, you know, obviously we can talk about the Dick Wagner thing, but even the ones that are Ace, he's playing a lot different than he normally would, you know what I mean?
It's not his normal Ace style.
Yeah, it's not his usual pentatonic blues shit, you know what I mean? Whereas, like, I think a lot of that's Bob Ezrin coaching him, you know what I mean?
That, like you said, they rushed through all the previous albums, you know, so once they got one that was good, that's the one they went with, and I think they pushed him to do better.
Yeah, he actually played and sat down and wrote the parts and shit, rather than just plugging in and ripping one out.
Right.
And speaking of the voice at the beginning, as kids, we thought it was a miniature of Gene Simmons.
Really?
Like maybe a midget or a dwarf, but we always imagined like a little short Gene Simmons.
Oh yeah,
in the band.
See, now, I was told by somebody I went to school with that was Ace, so I always pictured Ace just, you know,
but
being trip spacey and messing around in the studio, being the spaceman that he is, you know.
That's awesome.
I always pictured it like a bunch of kids playing at a playground, like right at the moment of like an apocalypse,
right?
Like a nuclear Holocaust type thing.
What, the God of Thunder or the intro?
The intro to it, you know, like here's the end of the world, you know, there's a bunch of kids playing, you know, and then all of a sudden.
There they are.
Yeah, you know, kind of pictured it like the Terminator thing, you know, where the kids are on the playground and all of a sudden it's.
There he is, right.
I can see that a little bit, yeah.
That's true. Cool.
I always love God of Thunder, you know, it's another one. Do you think that Gene should spit blood in front of God of Thunder, or do you think he should mix it up and do, like, you know, do some blood and then go into maybe Unholy or, you know, something else, or Almost Human. If, not that they would do that, but...
I don't know. I think he, you know... I understand. Everybody talks about how Kiss needs a new set list and this and that. You know, I've heard that quite a bit lately.
Right. But
I understand why they can't really switch it up, because it's such a formatted show. You know,
right.
There's so much going on that they've got to do this here, and they got to do this here, and they got to do this here. Otherwise, it ain't gonna work.
Yeah.
But when I saw them, I want to say it was Wisconsin. Me and my wife went and saw them. I had like a city fair type thing, or a town fair. It was in a park. It was in an amusement park.
Really?
But they had a big, like, Verizon Wireless amphitheater inside this park.
So it was like Kiss Meets the Phantom.
Exactly, exactly. And
was there any, like, animatronic robots running around?
Was Bubba there?
Hey, no, Chopper don't hurt nobody unless he wants to.
But I know I had these Kiss shoes on here, and I fucking walked miles, it felt like, and I was about ready to take these off and go barefoot.
I bet, dude.
But anyway, he spit blood during Unholy, and really? I thought that worked out.
That is cool.
They play God of Thunder, but when he actually spit blood, it was during the song Unholy, and I thought that went pretty well with Unholy.
Oh, yeah. That's, they're interchangeable. Those are the demon songs, right, you know exactly. What I mean? Wouldn't it be weird, though? But back in the day, he would do the blood and then go into, like, 100,000 years or something, you know? He didn't necessarily have to sing right after the blood.
Right.
So, in theory, he could spit blood and then they could fucking play anything.
Right, it was just...
But God of Thunders is, like, the one, though,
that
to me.
That was the one,
you know?
So he could do his heavy bass stuff.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Then he could fly up.
Right into it, yeah.
It makes for a good intro for that song, the blood.
Yeah.
Goes with it.
Definitely goes with it well. I think. So anyways, we all give God of Thunder a big thumbs up, you know?
Yes. Oh, yeah.
I would have to say. I don't know.
It's funny, Paul Stanley wrote it, though.
Yeah, I was going to say.
Yeah.
We could mention the demo that is kind of strange, you know?
Yeah, it was strange.
I don't like the demo
that much.
It was
a little bit faster, too.
Right.
So, like,
and it has like a lot of 16ths on the hi-hat,
yeah,
you know?
Exactly.
It's kind of strange, and I don't like it that much. Can you imagine if they had recorded it like that and with those lyrics and everything? Kind of... I don't think it would have turned into quite the
wouldn't have been a
song that we know it as today. You know what I mean? I think it would have been kind of a throwaway, maybe.
I would say, it'd probably been one that they don't play. Just kind of a filler.
Yeah. So what's next on the list for Destroyer? What you got, Weezin?
Great Expectation.
Oh, yeah. Any thoughts on it from whoever?
I love the song myself. And being introduced to it as a small child, it didn't bother me that it was different. It wasn't hard enough, or if it was a ballad, or you know, it was a ballad or not. It didn't really matter to me. But it was a fun one to sing.
Right.
It was an easy one to sing, and it really shows Gene's vocal abilities, I think.
Oh yeah.
Right.
I feel it's a real good song. I know a lot of people frown on it, hate on it, but as a kid being introduced to it, you can't help but to like it.
I always liked it as a kid.
Yeah.
I still like it today. I think it's great.
I always pictured Gene Simmons, you know, with the choir parts.
Right.
I always pictured Gene Simmons in like a church conducting the choir in his full demon outfit type thing. Right.
That's a big contradiction.
Right, exactly.
He'd be like dressed up like those original Kissmas photos, you know? They'd be holding like the big red candles and shit.
Yeah, exactly.
Out there caroling.
Have you guys heard the actual demo of that, where instead he'll be like, you see Pete playing the drums, I'm going to use each guy's name. What do you think of that? Do you think it would have been as cool that way?
Cool.
Or?
Not cool. Not cool.
Yeah, because then they could never play it again now, you know?
Right.
They'd have to change it to like Eric or Tommy or whatever.
Well, you get so used to listening to it the original way for so long, it's hard to accept anything else.
Yeah, it's like the same thing with a Sweet Pain lead. You know, you're just like brainwashed on the classic.
Once it gets ingrained in your head, then that's what you're used to hearing, and anything else just doesn't sound right.
Right.
It might sound good, but it just doesn't sound right.
Speaking on that, was it you know, how you had seen Creatures first with Vinny, and he doesn't play any of the Ace leads. What was that like for you? Were you thinking, what the fuck is this guy doing, man?
Well, yeah, basically, you know, I never really thought... Vinny wrote some good songs with him stuff, but I never really thought that his style of guitar was what Kiss needed, you know?
No.
He was more of a power chord, you know, type guitar player.
They were trying to move into that shredder type of thing because of
Van
Halen.
It worked at the time. It worked at the time because, you know, that's the direction that they were going in.
Right.
But, you know, just to see him up there, you know, playing
some of the older songs and, you know, not doing the Ace stuff. And, you know, right. It was kind of weird. I was like, you know, I didn't know, like I said, if Ace had left the band, like, if he was sick or what was going on, you know.
Well, we had thought that they had picked Vinny because he had the same hairstyle as Ace.
Yeah.
That's what we thought.
Vinny in the band, it was like trying to put Duplo blocks with Legos. Like, right. Just didn't fit.
Right.
I don't know. I liked Vinny when I was a kid. I thought, you know, I thought he ripped, dude.
Well,
I even like his solo shit.
Oh, he is a good guitar player.
Yeah, yeah.
Oh,
he's great. His style just didn't seem like Kiss.
Right.
And when I was surprised to see him at the concert, we had seats were pretty far from the stage. So we walked up to the stage, and he was right there. So it was the closest I'd ever been to a Kiss member, and it was Vinnie Vincent with
right.
makeup.
Right.
Love It Loud, I think it was.
Wow,
that's cool.
That's pretty cool. You know, Vinnie Vincent, I had seen something where they were doing Firehouse on the Lick It Up, or the Creatures tour, and when it came to the lead, it was just like, Jesus Christ, what
yeah.
the
right.
fuck is this guy playing?
Right.
I mean, it was, you know, that's like a, I don't know, that's like a classic Ace solo. And
right.
He's just, you know, like, all over the place.
Some solos, you just gotta play them like they're meant to be played, you know
right.
what I mean?
Yeah. Especially
everybody
understands
solos. That, you know, you're not this is not your style, but I mean, you're doing whatever it's gonna take to complement
especially
the song.
Especially if they're memorable
right.
solos.
Right,
know,
exactly.
Right. Yeah, you can't
it's
take
like, you
Strutter
know,
and
to
play
a,
some...
like a certain part of the song that everybody knows.
Exactly.
You know, you don't just skip over a memorable part of a song just because
right.
you're a different guitar player.
Yep.
You know, you certain things you gotta just let be.
That was what was cool about Bruce, though. He was like, he could do the Ace shit, but he would also kind of have his own flares in there.
Right.
But it was close enough, you know.
Bruce, you know, I always said, I mean, I don't want to change the subject, but I always said that I don't think that if Eric Carr would have lived, that the reunion tour would have ever happened.
I don't think so either.
If it would have happened, I think Eric Carr would have had a part of it.
He probably just would have put on the old Fox makeup
on the Fox makeup. It might have been a reunion tour of, like, Eric Carr came out for the encore, like a 4 or 5 song
right.
encore that they played with Eric.
Yeah,
you know,
have
right.
2 drum sets.
Something like that, yeah. But
that'd
I mean,
be weird, huh?
I really don't
be
know
weird.
Because Kiss were so happy with what they were with Eric Carr. You know, at
well,
that
hell
point.
Yeah. When they had Ace in their car,
yeah.
Man, that shit's
so,
killer.
I mean,
you watch that Sydney show, you know,
mm-hmm.
they're on top of shit, dude.
Right.
They sound great.
Oh, yeah,
that's
right.
one of my favorite versions of Detroit Rock City.
Oh, yeah.
Is the one that was originally on Exposed from that
yeah.
Sydney deal.
Yeah.
It's killer, dude. They
yeah.
Paul sounds great. You know, Kiss really stepped it up with Eric, I think,
yep.
man.
Sure
you know, I love Peter Criss as much as the next guy, but Eric buries him as far as
oh,
technical
yeah.
drumming goes,
definitely.
You know.
He incorporated
so does
the
fucking Eric Singer, you know.
Yeah.
But, you know, so that's pretty cool for you to see Creatures, I bet. Man, that's pretty cool. But, so we're talking about, what, Great Expectations?
Yes.
What did you think the first time you heard it, Clinton? Because obviously it wasn't on a live, too.
Right. Yeah, I was like, man, this is weird. This is a lot different than, because, I mean, even though I hadn't heard, it wasn't on a live, too, I still had, you know, quite a few albums before Destroyer, so I hadn't heard that kind of production on Kiss songs before, and I was like, whoa, this is different. It kind of reminds me, you know, that song and like Sweet Pain, both, they kind of remind me of Gene's solo album a little bit.
I could hear that in that.
Right.
So,
yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
You know, I had heard Gene's solo album, so I wasn't like totally shocked by like, whoa, what is all this, you know?
The piano parts and
yeah,
such.
Yeah, just weird theatrical sounding stuff, you know. But I liked it. I like the whole album, you know.
Yeah, I do too. What about you, D-Rock?
Well, I'm going to have to say that I'm the opposite of everybody else. But let me clarify, I do love the song.
Right.
You know, I do like the song. But as a kid, I never really wanted to listen to slow songs, you know, so
right.
I always fast forward over the song, so I never really listened to it. I always skipped over. I wanted to rock and roll.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
You know, so.
Yeah.
I eating all
that's
kinds
true,
of
too.
Sugar and skills and bouncing off the wall. Fucking Ricochet Rabbit.
You know, I mean, I like the song. I think it's a great song, and I agree with Johnny. You know, it's another song that Gene has where he's showing his vocal skill, you know, and he's showing his range and his talent, you know, but I just never really listened to it much.
Well, as kids, listening to it, it's hard to not like a Kiss song. We're such Kiss fans.
I mean, it's Kiss.
You had to like it. It was Kiss.
You still like it, you know, but regardless.
Yeah, when you're that into a band, you're willing to go places wherever they want to take you. You know what I mean? If you're that into them, it's like they can't really do much wrong for you.
They can't do no wrong, you know, or, you know, they can't put out anything bad. You're still going to love it, you know?
Right. I just remember thinking that I didn't know at first that it was Gene singing it, even though it had his name on the record. I just didn't think it sounded like him to me at all. Because, I don't know, it just didn't sound like him at all. I thought it was the more gravelly Gene.
Right.
And, you know, I really like the song. I still like it a lot. And I just always wondered what it would sound like without the whole choir behind it. You know what I mean? Just a regular song.
Well, I think the first line of that song is one of my favorite lines of any song.
It's because your mama told you you couldn't sing it.
And it's just a hit. Sitting in your seat, then you stand and clutch your breast. I mean, come on, that's great.
You just picture some chick in the front row
pushing them up, so
just being
as
like,
a target.
This is what's up,
right? And as a kid, we really didn't know what he was saying, but later on in life, listening to the song, it's just an epic perv Gene song.
Yes.
Yeah, I think it's pretty cool. You know. I kind of like the version that you can hear where they talk about Ace and Paul and Peter and everything, but
I had just recently listened to that.
But like we said, if you're ingrained on the one, any kind of new version of it, it never quite hits home for you, you know what I mean?
Right.
But all in all, Great Expectations is a great fucking Kiss tune.
Yeah.
You know, it's one of those ones that's a little bit underrated, I'd say.
Yep.
You know?
Definitely.
Except for D-Rock. Everybody likes it a lot.
Oh, he likes it.
I never said I didn't.
I'm just fucking
like
with you, dude.
Said I never really
he said it's rated
to.
Right about where it ought to be.
Right. So, Great Expectations. We all dig on it. And you should too.
Yeah! All right. Well, that's it for part one. So, everybody stay tuned. Part two's coming up right now.
Yeah.
Get it.
Yeah. Yay!
Pretty mystical.